Hello and welcome to the Today's Homeowner Weekly Podcast. We're here to help you with the challenges we all face as homeowners. I'm Danny Lifford.
And I'm Joe Truini. And each week, Danny and I are here on the podcast to answer any and all home improvement questions.
And we want to hear from you. Send us your questions or comments at todayshomeowner.com/podcast. Today's Homeowner Podcast is brought to you by The Home Depot, how doers get more done. This week, we look at concrete expansion joints. Why are they there? And what can you do to make them look a little better once they've deteriorated a little bit? Also, we're going to share with you some ideas on how to brighten up that dark paneling or cabinetry that you may have in your house. Also, everybody's looking for ways to eliminate wrinkles. No, not those kind of wrinkles. The wrinkles in your wall-to-wall carpeting, that's a lot easier than taking care of those other wrinkles. We'll tell you exactly how. Also, reducing the time it takes for your dryer to dry your clothes is going to save you a lot of money on your energy bill. We'll tell you how. How about a simple solution, Joe?
All right, Danny, I have a safe, non-toxic way to block out pests and rodents and creepy critters from getting into your house.
Okay, sounds great. Let's get going. We want you to reach out to us anytime. You can pick up the phone and call the Today's Homeowner Hotline. It's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week opportunity for you to let us know any question that you would like for us to answer, or if you have a comment for something that you'd like for us to cover, pick up the phone right now, 800-946-4420. 4420 is the number. And of course, we love to get emails and appreciate all the great emails we've gotten this week. You can send us one right now or anytime at todayshomeowner.com/ask. Also, want to remind you about all of our opportunities on social media. I mean, go to the Today's Homeowner Facebook page. Man, there's a lot going on there. A lot of posting taking place every single day on all kinds of information that you can use at your house. Also, check out Pinterest. We're scoring some unbelievable record numbers on people that are visiting us and seeing some of our ideas on Pinterest, Instagram. And of course, if you would like to send me a message through Twitter, you can do so at Danny Lipford. Joe, you know, a lot of buzz been happening around here. I'm telling you, when we found out just a couple days ago that the Today's Homeowner television show has been nominated for a National Emmy Award, yes, the champagne corks were popping all over town.
That's amazing. And this is not the first Emmy nomination you've received.
No, that's right. No, this is our second time having an opportunity to win this national award. And we're looking forward to heading out to, it's in Pasadena, California this year.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice little, so we'll probably add a couple days here and there. But the tricky part is, who's going with me? Boy, everybody around the office sure is. They're treating me really good right now. Had somebody wash my truck the other day. I'm kidding. We'll have to decide on exactly our contingency that's going out there. But it'll be a great time and very exciting that we're being recognized. And this is actually one of the technical areas of the Emmys about multi-camera editing. Which is a tricky thing. And of course, you know that Brad Rogers in our office is instrumental a lot of the editing that takes place, particularly on the Today's Homeowner television show. And this happens to be the one that they're using to judge on is the shows we did down in my hometown of Mariana, Florida, the big community service project we did down there on Lafayette Landing. And it seemed to resonate well with the judges as far as all, because they had drones flying in the air. They had GoPros on shovels. They had camera over here. They had one up on we had a lot of multi-camera situations going on there.
Yeah, I wonder if when the guy invented GoPro, you know, for like jumping out of airplanes and skiing down mountains, did he ever figure that someone's going to mount one on a shovel to give you that perspective? But they are, GoPros are everywhere. And when we shoot Simple Solutions, even we use the GoPro sometimes where, you know, another camera doesn't fit in there. And, you know, to Scott and Brad, who I work with very closely on those Simple Solutions, you know, they do a great job and it's well deserved, this nomination.
Well, I appreciate that and looking forward to seeing what happens when we head in. There's kind of funny, some of the other people in the category, the Bold and Beautiful, you know.
Really?
Yeah, the soap
opera. Is
that
you and me?
That's what I was wondering when I first read.
Are you beautiful? I always get that mixed up.
And the same category that we're competing against here, Kelly Clarkson and the Kelly Clarkson Show, you know. So, you know,
that's all studio stuff. That's easy.
Yeah, I know it. Well, that's what I said.
Let's see here with a shovel and a GoPro.
That's right. So we'll see what happens on that. But very proud of a good bump in our road here in a good way. So we'll keep you posted on exactly what happens with that Emmy nomination. One other thing we're doing this week and each week for the next 3 weeks is a simple giveaway for Joe's phenomenally successful shed book. And all you have to do is go to todayshomeowner.com and then go to the radio page, and right on the page there you'll have an opportunity to win, and you can enter as many times as you like, and we'll be giving one away each week starting next week. Joe, first of all, this is the time of the year where a lot of people are exploring ways to deal with all the stuff they've accumulated. Certainly organizing the garage is a big thing right now, trying to figure out ways of utilizing the space that you have. But a lot of times it just comes down to you've got to have that outbuilding. And in many cases, it makes a lot of sense because there's a lot of things that can be stored in a storage building that should never be stored inside the house, like, petroleum products, different chemicals, and so forth. But tell everybody, I thoroughly enjoyed reading the shed book, and you really
you
dug into a lot of things that are the most common questions that people ask. But just kind of give an overview of that book, because some people might not want to wait for a contest and might want to go right now and purchase it.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, well, first, the publisher and I spent a lot of time trying to come up with the title that would be the best for this book. And this book is a DIY book for people who want to build their own sheds. So we came up with a title after much discussion. It's called Building Sheds. So there's no confusion on the content found within the pages here. It's a very straightforward book. It's the third shed book I've written, so I'm getting the hang of it here. It starts off very quickly. Most people want to get into building sheds, but the first chapter or two are about shed building methods, the construction methods, and then shed building products, meaning, siding and windows and roofing and all the things that go into building a shed. And then we go step by step. We built 5 sheds from scratch. Most shed building books, they have lots of pictures of pretty sheds and a couple of photographs here and there, but they don't really show you how to build one. So we have step by step, and it goes from an 8x10 garden shed that's part greenhouse, which is kind of cool, all the way up to a 14x20 post and beam, almost barn. It's a beautiful, beautiful shed. And then the other 3 fall in between. They get progressively larger. So any size yard, any size storage requirement you have, hopefully one of these sheds will help you. And there are dozens of photographs, dozens of illustrations. I think the book is about 220 pages, so there's plenty in there. And I'm thrilled to be able to give away 3 of them. And if we get the name of the people and they want me to sign it for them, I can. If they want to give it as a gift to someone, just let me know what name they want on there, and I'll be happy to sign it. And I'll ship it out right from here.
Now, where could someone go right this minute and buy it? There's a lot of impulse buyers out there that say this is exactly what we need. Or, as you mentioned, a great gift idea, and Father's Day is right around the corner. Where could they go right this minute, Joe?
Sure. They can go to Amazon, of course. They can go to the publisher. It's Taunton Press here in Connecticut. Pretty much anywhere you find books. I think I'm not sure how many other bookstores are carrying it, but if you just go online, you can find it. And it's simply called Building Sheds, and or you just type in my name, and all the books I've written will pop up, and all the articles as well, including most of the work I've done with Today's Homeowner. But yeah, it's pretty easy to find.
And again, your opportunity to win, you can go right now to todayshomeowner.com, go to our radio page, and you'll see it right on the front of the page there on what you need to do to enter. Very, very simple. So best of luck to you on that. And Joe, we appreciate you providing those. And, certainly there's so many situations with the sheds. And a shed doesn't have to look like an afterthought. If you follow some of the suggestions and tips that Joe has in this book, it can really blend into your yard a little, very well, kind of accenting some of the colors on the shed, to complement what you have in the house. And of course, landscaping never hurts.
Never hurts at all. And we touch on all that, I also talk about the different features you can add to a shed. And the other thing I stress is outbuildings don't always have to be for storage. That's what everyone needs, of course, and that's the most common use. But if you want a writing studio, a music studio, someplace to do artwork, or even as a kid's playhouse, there's a lot of good reasons to build a shed.
Pam is on the line right now. Pam, tell us what's going on around your house there, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Yes, my house is like 70 years old, and in between the garage space, the garage flooring, they put about a foot and a half, like piece of slab of concrete.
Uh-huh.
And in between those two is an iron bar that is now, because it's 70 years old, rotting away. Unfortunately, only half of it has rotted away. The other half is rotted, but it's still intact. So it's coming out in chunks.
That seems unusual. You know, expansion joints or dividers like that generally are made of a material like wood or some kind of composite material that'll allow that concrete to expand and contract a little bit. Certainly, iron does very little expansion and contraction, so kind of an unusual scenario for that. Is one slab a little older than the other, possibly?
Well, it's all one slab. It's all, you know, the main garage, and then there's the iron bar in between. It's just one piece. I have a single garage. It's not a double.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But half of it is just all gone, and the other half
is
rusted, but it's still in place.
Okay. Well, here's what you could do to make it look a lot better and also serve the purpose that expansion joint should be serving. But it sounds a little barbaric to fix it like this. What we would normally do in a situation like this is take something called a side grinder. There's a number of other explanations of this type of power tool. But basically, it'll have an abrasive blade on it that's 5 or 6 inches in diameter. And boy, you put on the gloves, the glasses, the face mask, everything you got on the safety rack before you grab this thing. And then you actually would cut the top 3/4 inch off of whatever's left there. You want to be able to get a 1/2 inch or 3/4 inches cut down below the surface of the slab. And that can be a little tricky and a little bit labor intensive to do. And of course, this can be rented very easily. And then once you cut that out and remove that, then, of course, you've cleaned out that gap very well, and then you fill it with a concrete repair caulk or an expansion caulk material. And basically, this will fill in that void, and you'll want to just make it nice and flush with the slab. And then once it dries, it remains a bit pliable so that during those changes in temperature and the movement of the slab, it won't cause it to crack like if you put mortar or concrete in that. So you might be able to find a handyman or even a remodeling contractor that would be able to work that in to do that exact project for you. But I would really ask around with a lot of your friends and neighbors and such on someone that's a handyman that's done a lot of projects like that. It'll be something that they would be familiar with.
Okay,
and another thing I've recommended to people, and this has worked really well as a recommendation, is to call one of your local realtors. You know, the realtors deal with closing all the time and all of the different odds and ends that come out of home inspection. So if you know, the reputable realtor around your town and so forth, call them and say, hey, you got a couple names of handyman. I guarantee you they have some that they use and they work very well. And just hit those phones hard and you'll find someone that can solve this problem for you.
Sounds good, Danny.
Okay, Pam. Well, thank you very much. And we appreciate it. We hope you have a great week.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, thank you. Joe, that seems a little odd, doesn't it, that there would be metal
right
in there if it's serving the purpose that it can, an expansion joint should serve. I wonder what the scenario is there.
Yeah, she said it's a bar, so I was thinking, is it a rebar or is it, when she first mentioned it, I thought it was like a flat piece of steel that they put vertically like you'd see on the edge of a lawn or something.
Uh-huh, that's the first thing I thought about.
Why it's there, Yeah, maybe it seems like it should be an expansion material, not a piece of steel, but maybe that's what it is. But yeah, you're going to have to just cut it out. I mean, you don't want to just wait till it all rots out. So yeah, I would just cut it out as much as you can and fill it with caulk. I mean, that's about all you can do.
Sure.
Fortunately, the issue isn't with the slabs, so that's good. It's just with the expansion in between.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is not cracking out in the middle there, so it must be doing its job and not having any cracks elsewhere. Now, the same goes if you have a wood expansion joint or if you have some of the old tar expansion material that might be deteriorating. It's the same thing. Use whatever tool necessary to cut it down to where it's about 1/2 inch below the surface of the concrete. Then, if it's a bigger void, you can use backer rod, which is a foam-type material drill readily available at Home Depot that you can force down into the crack and then put the caulk on top of that. That's what it's made for, to fill in some of those voids. But it is a good idea on any of those expansion joints on concrete, whether it's your patio or your driveway or sidewalk, to prevent that water from filtering down through there. Now, it may take a long time before it affects the concrete with the cracks, but if you're not filling those expansion joints up and a lot of water is going underneath there, and particularly if you're in a northern area that you'll get water there that will freeze, you can get a lot of problems there. So very easy to head off that potentially expensive repair by doing something very, very simple right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, and the other option for filling joints like that, as long as it's relatively level, is there's a company called Sika, S-I-K-A, that makes professional grade products, and you can get them at Home Depot, and they have a self-leveling caulk that works perfect for this, because you lay it in nice and thick, and that's it, and it just will level itself out. You don't have to tool it or smooth it or anything. And then the other trick I learned from a contractor is if you sprinkle a little bit of sand on top of it before it's completely dry, and then just use a leaf blower and blow it once it's dry, blow off the excess sand, that joint will kind of blend in a little bit with the surrounding surface, the concrete, because it has now a little bit of sand on it. So either way, though, it's the tip here, though, is use something flexible. Mm-hmm. Not a piece of steel, certainly, as Pamela had.
Yeah, that's great. And you can actually use some of the playground sand that's already filtered and clean and just sprinkle it across the top there. I like that idea to make it blend in as much as you possibly can. Hey, we're going to grab an email right now. We'd love to get your email question. You can do so by going to todayshomeowner.com/ask. This came in from Mary in Illinois. How do I stretch wall-to-wall carpeting to eliminate a large wrinkle I have in the middle of my dining room? Living room. So what? Well, I'll tell you, we've done this quite a bit, and boy, what a unique tool a knee kicker is. Have you used a knee kicker very much, Joe?
As little as I possibly can.
Man,
I still enjoy walking.
Yeah, I said the word barbaric earlier. That falls right into that category. Basically, this is it's about 18 inches to 2 foot long. It has a pad that you use to kick your knee into it. On the other end, it has a pretty aggressive grip. It looks like a bear paw. Not that I've seen a lot of bear paws, but just imagine what they would look like.
That's a good description. Yeah, that's exactly right.
And you're basically using it to grip the carpet as you're crawling around on the floor, and you're kicking it with your knee. That puts a tremendous amount of force for that carpet to stretch. Now, if you're not a real strong do-it-yourselfer, this is one that's very easy to have the local carpet installer. You can get one of the installer's names by, calling one of the flooring supply companies there and let them basically do just a little service call to drop by. They also have the power stretcher that can really get it tight.
Yeah, that was what I was going to suggest. If you can't get the kicker or you don't feel like using that knee kicker, they have a power stretcher, which is a long bar that braces up against one end and it sticks to the carpet, and you just pump this handle up and down and it stretches it. And what you want to do before you do any of this is pull the edge of the carpet up off of the tack strip around the perimeter of the room, mm-hmm. so that it can move forward, because what you're going to end up with is excess carpet that you're going to have to trim away. Then tap it back down onto that tack strip. And the other thing you may find is wrinkled areas tend to collect more dirt and dust than flat areas. So when you stretch it out, you'll probably see a dusty, dirty spot where you had smoothed out that wrinkle. So you'll have to probably shampoo that area, in which case you might as well shampoo the whole rug.
And that's one of the advantages of tightening up the carpet. It makes it a lot easier to keep it nice and clean. I want to quickly remind you about the MRA landing page that we have. This is a special area on Today's Homeowner. It's at todayshomeowner.com/metalroofing. And we're put together a lot of articles, a lot of videos to answer your questions about roofing and about the advantages and benefits of using a metal roof. I mean, we talk about some of the 7 essential questions you need to ask before replacing the roof, and also re-roofing and roof replacement, how to make the right decisions to change, to be able to save energy as well as money. And we also knock down a lot of the metal roofing myths about, things, how expensive it is, different aspects of it. So go to todayshomeowner.com/metalroofing to find out a lot more. It's time for our best new product segment brought to you by the Home Depot, how doers get more done. Now, whether it's a string of lights over your patio, a fountain and a water feature, or a holiday light display, controlling electrical devices outdoors can be a real challenge. You forget to turn them off, or you remember as after you've gone to bed, you're outside unplugging them in your pajamas. The neighbors are entertained, but you're not very happy at this point. The Defiant Wi-Fi and Bluetooth enabled outdoor smart plug solves this because it allows you to control an outdoor device through the Hub Space app from wherever you are. It uses your existing Wi-Fi network or Bluetooth control when your Wi-Fi is not set up or if the network is down. There's no hub required, and it's compatible with Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, so you can use your voice to turn the devices on and off at any time. Plus, you can preset your on and off schedules in the app so that you never have to worry about remembering to turn everything off. So you can check out the Defiant Hub Space outdoor plug by going to HomeDepot.com. Hey, want to remind you how you can reach out to us here at Today's Homeowner. You can send us an email anytime, todayshomeowner.com/ask, or you can pick up the phone and give us a ring at 800-946-4420. That's what Carol did in Alpharetta, Georgia. And Carol, we're going to try to help you with a few ideas here, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be able to be connected.
Good, good. Tell us about some of the questions that you have here and some of the ideas that you have to kind of brighten things up inside the house. And we appreciate you sending the pictures. It's a type of scenario I have seen many, many times where it's absolutely beautiful, but you as the homeowner might be getting a little tired of some of the stained wood.
Well, it's interesting. So a couple years ago, I got on a crazy bend. And I actually sanded down all my kitchen cabinets and restained them to a lighter color because they're dark. I think the wood is provincial, the original wood from the house.
Mm-hmm.
I repainted the walls, but the floors are hardwood. And the trim around the windows, around everything, the door frames, around, we have French doors that lead into a sunroom. That's all the dark wood. And personally don't like it. And I'm not sure. We have beautiful paneling. It's, you know, in our den. My husband doesn't want me to touch it. And I know if I start, that's it. I'm going to be in trouble. So it's not pretty. Then I'm going to be midway through. And then I'm going to be saying to myself, why did I do this? So I'm just trying to figure out if there's a way maybe to either pull the trim down and restain it a lighter color, if that would work. I mean, I'm not quite sure what to do.
Okay. Well, I mean, there are a lot of ideas there and a lot of different ways to go on it. Of course, a serious part of it is once you paint that stained trim or stained paneling, you really can't go back on that. That has to be a real commitment in order to do that. And you've already done pretty good. I assume those walls, were they a paneling at some kind or some time that you painted over, or was that drywall?
No, that was drywall.
Okay, good.
That wasn't
good.
Paneling. It's just the wood below and then the wood near the fireplace.
Okay. Well, I know Joe has some great ideas on this, but I'll say that one of the things that you might consider here is just simply to paint some of the wall around the fireplace, because that fireplace kind of blends right in right now. And if you can put more paint on the paneling on the walls, but save the actual mantelpiece and the areas that go down vertically from the mantel, that whole surround, leave it stained, maybe just lightly sand it and put another coat of varnish on it. But probably the hardest thing to do would be to try to lighten this trim, because that essentially means stripping all of it down. But Joe, what would you do? Let's point Carol in the right direction here. What would you suggest that she try?
Considering I'm doing it.
That's
yeah,
right.
Considering
yeah,
you're doing
it. That's right.
If you've already stripped cabinets and repainted them, you'd certainly do this. And I agree with Danny. The first thing I thought is to paint that fireplace wall a lighter color and possibly even the fireplace mantle. And as far as the trim around the windows and doors, even the crown molding, I never recommend removing trim to to change the color of it. If you're going to remove it, it's to replace with new, or if you just don't like it, you know, you can remove it. So I would leave it in place and I would paint it. I'd clean it really well and paint it a light color. You'd be surprised how just that alone will brighten up that space a little bit more.
And that would be okay if I don't touch the other dark paneling around below.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can always repaint the whole room.
Sand
but
that some?
The molding itself?
Yeah, before I paint it.
No, I would just clean it really well. If there's some rough spots, you can lightly sand it, clean it with TSP, trisodium phosphate diluted, and just get it good and clean and dry. And then you might have to put a primer on it or try a paint that has a primer in it already. And you can certainly paint right over stained wood. There's no issue with that. So that's what I would do.
Now, what if I didn't? So the around the fireplace, you know, that's all that dark paneling, and that goes floor to ceiling, right?
Right, yep.
You're saying to paint that around the fireplace and then maybe paint the brick on the fireplace? Because that's got crown molding in the fireplace.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, I would start by painting the wall and see if that lightens it up enough, the space up enough, then, yeah, you can leave the mantle the way it is. But you can certainly paint it. Yeah, you can paint the mantle.
I think I would actually leave the mantle just like it is and leave the crown molding stained. And then just paint everything else between the crown and go ahead and leave your base molding stain and just paint that. It will make such a difference. And whether you paint it the same color as the adjacent walls or just have an accent wall there as a different color, you'll immediately, the whole room will be affected by that somewhat easy process. And then later on, if you see, okay, now we might want to paint the mantle, but I think that mantle and the wraparound mantle looks so nice. I think it's going to look even better once you have paint on either side of it and above it.
Interesting. What about the brick?
The brick, I would wait and see what it looks like afterwards, but it's very easy to whitewash the brick to brighten it up. You can paint it, any kind of color that you may want will certainly make a big difference. Or you might even decide to cover over it with some type of marble, granite, ceramic, porcelain, a lot of different options that you can do there, again, to put a little bit of an accent. Because no matter what you do, that fireplace is going to be the focal point of that room. You might as well let it stand on its own.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. And then as far as the walls, behind the fireplace, then I don't need to sand any of that. I would just need to clean it and let it dry, and then.
What's always good to lightly sand it, or use a material called liquid sandpaper that'll allow you to etch it just a little bit. But since it's such a small area, it shouldn't be that much of a problem. And to also make sure that your husband's okay with it, go ahead and put a nice portrait of your husband right above the mantle there. Put a nice little light on it, and that will smooth everything over, and you won't have to call the marriage counselor.
So there you go. All right.
well, Carol, thanks so much for being with us on this week's show.
Thank you so much for all your suggestions. I greatly, greatly appreciate it.
Oh, our pleasure. And if you need us along the way, let us know. You know how to get in touch with us. Let's get another one of the calls that came in on the hotline this week.
Hi, my name's Art. I'm calling from Colorado, and I'm asking about installing a vent for a gas clothes dryer going through the roof. I've looked at the building code. I know a little bit about that, but I really would like some help in regards to that as to how effective is it? How do I make it easy to clean and prevent fires? It's very expensive to have a contractor do it. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I had a situation in my previous house I improved drastically. But because, first of all, originally the piping for the dryer went down through the slab and to the outside. Well, it was about 35 feet long. And anytime you're venting anything, whether it's an exhaust fan or a dryer vent, range hood, anywhere, the shortest distance on your vent makes it more effective. So in this situation, if going vertically through the roof is your shortest way to go, here's what I would recommend, is an inline dryer vent booster. an inline dryer vent booster. I had a vertical rise in my exhaust from my dryer. And you think, okay, it's hot, hot air. It's going up. Well, it does, but it's heavy. So it needs a little boost. And you can do that by putting an inline booster fan in. That cost a little over $200. The one I used was from Fantech. And you put it in place, you wire it up, and then what happens is it does not turn on until the dryer kicks on and moves air through it. The minute it feels and senses that air coming to it, it turns on and it boosts that hot, moist air right to the outside. It's amazing. We were like dealing with an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes for a dryer cycle. The minute we installed this Fantech inline booster fan, it went down to 45 minutes. So I was saving a significant amount of money on my utility bill, and it just worked great. I would get up on the roof and clean it from the roof side about every, I don't know, maybe every 2 or 3 years, and it would have a fair amount of lint in it, but it really did make a big, big difference in that. It really worked well.
The only other thing I would suggest to Art is whenever you're running a closed dryer vent through the roof, the hood that you put on the outside, the vent hood, is really important.
Sure,
and most
is.
Roofers recommend one by a company called, I think it's called Dryer Jack. And the reason these, you want to create as little resistance as possible, as Danny was mentioning, because you want this air to flow out as smoothly as possible. And almost all roof vents are kind of either squared off or they're peaked, but the dryer jack is curved. Not only is the hood itself curved, but the damper inside is curved, so everything flows with the air, and it creates much, much less resistance than almost any other one. So pay the extra money and get one of these dryer jack vent hoods.
And Art, all you have to do in installing this Fantech inline system is either wire it yourself or have an electrician. Just it's a very simple, 120-volt connection to that. And you don't have to have any switching or anything else. You wire it hot because it's only going to turn on when the dryer calls for it. So you can save a lot of money on that. And even though the Fantech inline thing is a little over $200, and then the special cap that Joe mentioned, which is extremely important, but you want to make sure there's no resistance to that heat going out of the house. It's just so key that you don't have any problems whatsoever with that. That way you can drive the cost down. It's going to be safer, and then you have access. This is all assuming you have access to that vent in your attic space. And you get it set up one time, and you pretty much can forget about it. This is where we check in with our buddy Joe Truini for our simple solution.
All right, Danny, here's a safe, effective way to block out pests. And by safe, I mean non-toxic, all right? So, any kind of crack or hole you have around your house, you'd be surprised how little critters and certainly creepy crawlies, bugs, and spiders can get in, and then you'll find them in your house. So first, what you want to do is stuff some stainless steel wool into the holes. They're often sold as pot scrubbers. You can get them at the dollar store or hardware stores, and they look like little Brillo pads, but they're really springy, and they're made out of stainless steel, which is important because if you just use like anything made out of iron or metal, it'll rust away. So you take them, stretch them out, and stuff them at the hole. Usually two or three is enough to fill most holes, and set it in, at least an inch or two. And then spray in some expanding foam sealant. Only instead of using regular expanding foam, you can actually buy pest blocking foam. It's specially made to deter rodents and other critters because the foam contains capsaicin, which is the ingredient that makes hot peppers hot. So what happens is you put in the steel wool, then you spray this foam over it, this pest blocking foam. If a mouse or something like that tries to eat through the foam, they'll get deterred by the hot taste. And if for some reason they like the hot taste and they keep going, they'll eventually hit the stainless steel, which they will not be able to chew through. So that's the tip. And in fact, if you go to todayshomeowner.com/simple solutions right now, you can see a video of me using this tip to seal up around, I believe it was an air conditioning line, where an air conditioning line goes into a home. And the hole is quite a bit bigger than the line, which was the problem. And the homeowner had filled it with regular expanding foam and discovered that some little critter came and ate his way right through the foam and right into the house. So I dug out all that foam and what was left of it. And then you'll see I make that repair with the tip I just gave.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And you think about being able to seal it up for energy efficient aspects of things and the benefits of that, but then to put a barrier up against right. some insects, that's also a really, really good idea.
And by the way, one can of this foam, I mean, you'd probably never use it up if this is the only use you had, because it took literally like two or three little squirts, maybe, I don't know, it probably didn't even hardly empty the can at all. It was way more, because of course you put in a golf ball size bit of foam and expands to like a basketball size almost, you know, so, and it's always going to expand and come out and look kind of ugly. Just let it dry, and then just saw it off with almost anything, a sharp utility knife, a hacksaw blade, almost anything, and cut it nice and flush with the outside of the house.
Or I'll tell you, that serrated blade on your wife's cake knife really works well. I mean, don't let her see you use it. You don't let her. I mean, you kind of have to, you know, sneak in, get it, then just cut it off, and then, you know, rinse it off a little bit with the garden hose before you put it back in the drawer.
But then say, honey, I saw this was left out. Are you making me a cake?
And right. Like, yeah,
no, of course not.
That works out great. Hey, let's get right to an email here. If you'd like to send us one, do so today. Todayshomeowner.com/ask is where to go. This came in from Nashville, from Kevin. Boy, we've got a lot of listeners and a lot of viewers there that watch our show and listen to our show in and around the Nashville area. And Kevin says, I'm getting ready to build a privacy fence around my backyard, and I'm getting all kinds of mixed information on how to set the fence post. I've seen people just mix the concrete in the post hole, but my neighbor says that makes the concrete weaker. Boy, those neighbors, they're always ready with an opinion. So and he says, I shouldn't do it this way, which is, you know, which is it? I want to do it right. I'd like to make it as simple as possible. Well, I'll tell you, Kevin, both of you are right in one way. There are certain concrete mixes that you should mix in a wheelbarrow and then pour in the hole. But, you know, most concrete mix, you know, is not designed to be mixed in the hole that way, but it's a good idea if you want the maximum strength. However, there is one type of concrete that we've used a lot from Quikrete. It's the fast-setting concrete mix that's in the red bag, and it's made exactly for the job you're talking about. Once you plumb the post in the hole just like you want it, all you have to do is to pour the red bag mix into the hole and then top it off with, and this is a key part of it, the appropriate amount of water per the instructions on the bag. That's the key thing, is to spread that water around evenly and make sure you're using the right amount. And depending on the temperatures, within about 20 to 40 minutes, the concrete's dry enough to hold the post still. Within a few hours, it'll be completely set. So, you know, when I've built a lot of fences over the years, and when you have a situation like this, you can go along and set all of your posts, regardless of how many you're setting, and then just use some type of scrap wood to, you know, make sure that they stay nice and plumb and right where you want them. And then by the time you get to the end of your fence, you can go right back pretty much and start putting your stringers up so that you can essentially finish the fencing job in one day instead of having to, like the old days, set the fence post and then come back. So that should help you on that project. And privacy fence can make a big difference in the overall look of your yard.
And when you're putting in a new fence, something we always recommend is fill up the concrete up, you know, as high as you need to, close to the ground. Don't overfill it, but fill it up like within 2 inches or so of the ground. And then cut out a nice circle around the grass and put in either mulch or even better, some gravel. Because if you don't, and you come by with your weed whacker, you know, to trim the grass, you're going to cut up those posts. I saw a post the other day. I'm not sure what was holding it up. It seemed like it was a four by four. It looked like beavers had gotten to it. There was a very narrow section. Might have been like a 1-inch square of wood holding up the post. You'd think when you're cut it about halfway through, you'd stop hitting it with the string trimmer. But so the idea is if you put gravel around there, there's no reason to trim the grass because it won't grow that far. So that's the other tip when you're putting up a fence post or even a deck post.
Now it's time for our podcast question of the week. Hey, we'd love to get a question from you. You can do so by going to todayshomeowner.com/podcast. This came in from Topeka, Kansas. Kevin asks, hi, Danny. We're converting our two-car garage into a family room. I'm planning to install vinyl plank flooring over the concrete slab floor. The problem is the slab is a little wavy and uneven. What's the best way to level the surface for the new vinyl flooring? Thanks for any suggestions. Joe, you know, when I think about something like this, you know, of course, we talk about the self-leveling different materials that are available, you know, that you mix it according to the directions. And then you essentially, you have it in a 5-gallon bucket, you just pour it out, and it pretty much just levels right out if you follow instructions and have it at the right consistency.
Exactly.
My only concern on something like a garage is that if it was done right originally, the floor is not flat and level right now. It has a little bit of a grade toward the doors to allow any water that, you know, might get in there to roll right out where the doors are. So that would be my concern about recommending that. What would you recommend? Do you think just a traditional floor patch compound that you would apply with a trowel that takes a little skill, or do you think he should maybe put just let's call it a form board right at the doorway and then try putting the self-leveler in? What do you think?
Yeah, the only reason I wouldn't suggest the patching compound is you'd have to go and patch you have to find all these points. You know, if you knew there was one place where it was low, you could fill it. So I was thinking the same thing, to use it's just called self-leveling underlayment, which is a super thin cement, for lack of a better word. And it's meant for self-leveling. It's like maybe like a thick milkshake, even thinner than that. So it levels itself out. And as far as the pitch of the floor going out, when it was a garage, but I assume since it's now a family room, they built a wall there where there used to be doors, so there should be a wall. And so the sill plate, not the sill plate, but the bottom plate, sole plate of the wall would hold this in. And this is the one I've used is from Custom Building Products, and it's called Level Quick RS. Mm-hmm. And the RS is the important part. And I discovered that stands for fast setting, and that's what you want. It dries in less than 4 hours, depending on the situation, you know, the humidity in the air. And it can be feathered out to like a thin feather edge, meaning to zero. And you can pour it as thick as, I think, if I remember correctly, 1.25 inches or 1.5 inches, maybe even. In a case like this, you probably won't need much more than 1/2 inch, I would think. I don't think
probably
this is going to be that wavy, right?
So
you just pour it out. Now, the other thing that most people don't do, even some professionals, Custom Building Products recommend, they have a primer. It's called Level Quick Primer. And you pour that out first, and let that dry, and then you put down the RS, the underlayment, the Level Quick RS. And what the primer does, just like any primer does, it helps this new thin layer of concrete bond to the slab. And all that's really important because some of this is going to be really thin. So that's what I'd recommend, those two products. And you'll end up with a perfectly level, smooth floor.
And Kevin, to find out more about what Joe's talking about, you can go to CustomBuildingProducts.com. They're great friends of ours. We worked with them a lot, and they are serious about producing some really good materials for leveling and just about anything that you need along those lines. We appreciate that question. And again, if you'd like to send us a question, you can do so by going to todayshomeowner.com/podcast. Well, that pretty much wraps up our podcast for this week. We continue to appreciate all of the great reviews that we've gotten, and hope you'll keep coming back listening to our podcast each and every week. I'm Danny Lipford, along with my buddy Joe Truini. Thanks so much for being with us here on this Today's Homeowner Podcast.